you an in-betweener? Signs of being between perimenopause and menopause. I'm Dr. Valerie Davidson from Progress Your Health.
And I'm Dr. Robert Mackey from Progress Your Health. So you just finished your newsletter, this upcoming newsletter this morning.
I did. And that's what's prompting this podcast is I wrote an article about the in-betweener, which is you're not quite in menopause, but you're just coming out of perimenopause. So you're like in this gray area. And I do feel like there's a lot of women. I mean, there's a lot of women in the world, but there's a lot of women that kind of fall into that space. And I feel like there's a gap in medicine because people aren't really sure how to treat them.
I will say, I know we've talked about this on some other episodes in a roundabout sort of way, but you actually just came up with this in-betweener term. You know, did you hear it somewhere? Did
no,
you just
come up with it? No, I don't think so, because it is like you're in between perimenopause and menopause.
Totally. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like pre-menopause, you know, but post-perimenopause. Mm-hmm. You know, so the in-betweeners, I think, is great. You said there's a gap there, and I think the gap is that those are for the practitioner and the woman going through it, right? Those literally are the toughest situations to handle. We were talking about in the last episode that, you know, those hormones are, I think you said it perfectly. It's like a moving target. Like, how do you navigate that?
No, absolutely. I feel like for the, you know, unfortunately, when you're kind of in that in-between stage, some women can have no symptoms, you know, like those lucky unicorns, or some women have a lot of the symptoms, or they have a few and they're debilitating. But it's like you can have the same symptoms of having menopause and perimenopause like smushed together.
So, yeah, right.
But then you think if you're not in menopause, but you're not in perimenopause and you go to your practitioner, some practitioners have no problem giving you a whole bunch of estrogen, here, take all this. But is that really, you know, is that really good to do? And then at the same time, then there's other practitioners that'll say, oh no, you're not in menopause. You have to be, you can't have a period for 12 months. Then you're in menopause. Then you can do HRT. And that seems like a really long time to wait for women to feel miserable.
Yeah. Yeah. But see, now this is where, again, the subtleties and the nuances come into play every time. We had a question from someone a while back. I don't know if it was Ask the Doctor or if it was YouTube or what it was, but they said they were like 44, still cycling, and they've been on estrogen now for a while. I'm like, whoa, I think that's becoming like the trend. Women are younger and younger and younger, still cycling and getting estrogen therapy. Our rule for all of a very long time was if you're still cycling, you're not a candidate for estrogen. But I know that that's changing a little bit and there's caveats to that, but that's what we used to do for a very long time.
Not exactly. Like it would be more like if you're cycling, you're getting a period, you're not a candidate for like hardcore sort of HRT of a woman that's not making any estrogen.
Right.
Right. You don't want to put estrogen on top of estrogen. And every practitioner has their own way of doing things. You know, it is an art and a science, you know, to be able to do HRT. But I do feel like if you don't want to treat somebody that's in perimenopause and somebody that's maybe an in-betweener, or somebody that's in menopause the same exact way.
Right, right. Yeah, all three of those are very clear. What you would use in the early perimenopausal woman is quite a bit different than what you might use in the postmenopausal woman. And then really the, you know, in-betweener, as you say, they might have a combination of both of those ideas, right? So all three of them are like fundamentally different.
Yeah. And I have put perimenopausal women and the in-betweeners on estrogen, but you do it a little bit differently. Like you have to be a little more delicate with some and I do like to do blood work. I know some people say blood work is not going to tell you if you're in perimenopause, but it can if you read the results differently.
Right.
If you're just going by a lab reference range, which nobody should ever really do that anyway, you need to go by what your own reference ranges are and what you've learned in your practice for reference ranges on any blood levels,
right,
regardless of what test it is. So I do feel like we treat them a little differently. It's just the in-betweeners where you're not quite in perimenopause and you're not quite in menopause is their bodies are changing quite a bit differently. So what I find is you got to get to know your practitioner. You and your practitioner are going to be chummy. Like you're going to be friends. You're going to know each other because you might have to change their doses or alter some things depending on what their symptoms are and what relief they're getting, as opposed to somebody that's in menopause or somebody that's opposed, you know, in perimenopause. Because I do feel like their bodies are more of in a kind of a stressful transition that you have to be aware of that.
Sure, sure. And that's the part right there is that makes it challenging because they start somewhere, but it's probably not going to stay there. It's going to modify. Now, And then by the time they're actually full-blown menopause, it's going to probably change again. You know, then it might actually settle down a little bit and maybe become a little bit more consistent if you've been able to achieve some level of success there. But yeah, the in-betweener phase, those are always the most challenging for sure.
To think about, like I said, I wrote a news article on it. We have a news article called the Progress Your Hormones newsletter. So if you're interested, I'm going to actually do a two-part series on the in-betweeners where this first newsletter that's going to come out in a couple of days, so it'll probably be out by the time this this airs, is it's just going to talk a little bit more about the symptoms and some treatment plans, whether it are more like treatments, whether you to do BHRT or to not do BHRT, or how to do the BHRT to transition that, and then also some supplementation and lifestyle stuff. That's in the first article. And then the second one, I'm going to go into a little bit more about blood testing and actual different treatment plans, because there's so many different ones, but putting some more examples on there. But I will say, when you're thinking about the symptoms, so it's like you can have hot flashes, but you're still getting a period. You can not sleep and your libido's out the window. You can still be gaining weight. You can still have the hair issues. It's like the whole combination. The skin is changing. My hair is changing, but I'm getting periods. You know, it's and the brain fog is there. So I have a whole list of the different symptoms that you would see in that, as opposed to what might be different from true menopause versus true perimenopause.
Sure. So if you're thinking that from a, you know, from a time perspective, we're talking, you know, from a woman, you know, as early as her early 40s to her mid 40s to her later 40s, there's like a whole phase and transition right there. And now she's transitioning from her later 40s into her early 50s. So she's kind of going through like this, you know, anywhere from a 10 to a 15 year process of, you know, of this hormonal, you know, transition. That's a long time of a woman's life where, you know, that's, you know, a very busy, productive, stressful time of a woman's life. And all of a sudden she's having to deal with all these hormone problems.
That is true. I would say typically right around that late 40s, early 50s is where you see that. I mean, when someone stops having a period or you're doing the blood testing and it's truly showing menopause, you know, you can differentiate that.
Yeah.
But when somebody is still having a period, their FSH might be, you know, not quite over 30, but not really under 20. And it's moving around a little bit. Like one time we'll catch it at 50. The next time we'll catch it at, you know, 19. It's moving around a little bit. Then, you know, that's that in-between phase where they don't do as well when you give them just a straight up, here, take an estradiol patch and some Permetrium or something. You know, they would do better with the Permetrium and the progesterone. Like all women, you know, whether you're in perimenopause, menopause, or the in-betweeners, progesterone is amazing. But you have to be careful with that estrogen so that you don't give too much to get some symptoms, or too little to where they're not getting benefit, because you got it. You know, you do have to treat them with a little bit of estrogen. You just have to really finesse it.
And some you can't, right? Some you try to give them estrogen, you know, let's say they're in that, you know, they're just starting that in-betweener phase, still having a regular cycle. You try to give them estrogen and it just sort of messes it up.
Yeah.
You know, it creates more issues. So, you know, that's where, you know, sometimes if you're having a regular period, you're just not a candidate for estrogen quite yet. But now, like you said, there's other ones where you can actually do a little bit. You can give them a little bit and it actually solves lots of problems. It's definitely, you know, trying to understand, which again, why we started this podcast, why we've been doing it and answering these questions, because these answers for women are really challenging to find. And, you know, there's so many subtleties and nuances that I think make it even more challenging. So what else should we say about the in-betweeners?
Well, I will say, you know, with the in-betweeners, you have to be careful with just taking too much estrogen. I would say that. And like you said, you can do a little bit of estrogen. What I find with the in-betweeners, with when you're not quite in menopause and not in perimenopause, that's where doing a compounded biest really can have some magic.
Yeah.
Because that a biest cream, transdermal, is a combination of estriol and estradiol. And if you're using a compounding pharmacy, you can pick any dose that you want for that specific individual.
Right.
So a lot of times I'll use different ratios, lower doses of the estradiol versus the estriol to get that benefit. So you, and then you have to change it, right? Because their bodies are changing. But I do find that works really well. I know a lot of practitioners will say, oh, that's just expensive lotion, or estriol, which is just E3, is expensive lotion. But I even have some women that are super sensitive to the estrogen. Like you said, they start bleeding like a stuck pig. They have emotions. Their mood swings are wild, and they're crying and they're mad. And they're like, why'd you give this to me? And I'm like, oh yeah, we know you're sensitive to estrogen. Then you might work on their liver detoxification, mm-hmm. that phase one and phase two that's detoxifying the metabolites, or maybe that estriol. Really, I found some women do really well on estriol. You give them that and they're like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but then there's different dosings, you know, so there's different milligrams to use. So I do say that they're a little bit, like I said, there's a little more fine tuning when you're not quite into menopause. But at the same time, when you can catch somebody between perimenopause and menopause and start them on a little bit of some hormone regime, once they go into menopause, it's so much easier.
Right.
You know, because I've had women that have come to me in menopause. I've never met them before, a new patient. You know, they're sleeping on blank, or what is it, towels, or changing their jammies from the hot flashes. We've already gotten into very low estrogen decline and they're for a while and their bodies are responding, as opposed to when you can catch them right when that estrogen is starting to decline and then kind of work with that a little bit. It just makes men, it's almost like they don't even go into menopause,
right.
Which is sort of the goal,
or at least it just smooths the transition so they don't go through that really uncomfortable phase that for a long time, that's what every woman, they start having the hot flashes and then that's when they do something.
And then, but the brain fog happened well before that. The weight gain happened well before that. Yeah. The cholesterol going up happened well before that. It's catching that right at that beginning stage, which is where I think you really kind of push that anti-aging medicine, or what do they call it now? Longevity and health span. You know, there's always a new word every decade.
Yeah. I mean, it's all, you know, it's just, yeah, just a different name, but we're all, you know, at least you and I, we've been trying to do the same thing for a long time, but it's all called something different these days. But you know, helping someone in the short term deal with their symptoms, but trying to set them up for long-term success. I think that's what we all want for the most part, is to look and feel as good as we can in the moment and maintain that for literally as long as possible. I think that's not a bad strategy. Now, granted, that takes some work. It takes a little bit of an investment on the financial side, on what you do every day, right? You know, that's the other thing about hormones too. Hormones don't solve all the problems. You actually have to have a relatively, you know, clean lifestyle and, you know, sleep well and, eat right and all those things. And then the hormones actually create some synergy there. I know sometimes hormones are billed. You and I always try to like under-promise and over-deliver, you know, right? Because that's just sort of our nature. But I know anything that's, magic treatment sometimes gets overblown as far as, how much it's going to actually be able to accomplish. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, that's where, like you said, there's so many different terms, you know, functional medicine. You know, we're naturopathic, you know, docs that, you know, you think about the foundations of naturopathic medicine, and then we apply it. It's all the same thing where you're working on the lifestyle, you're mm-hmm. working on the gut, you're working on exercise, you're working on sleep, you're working on clean food,
right.
You're working, there's supplementation, there's herbal medicine, there's food as medicine, and then there's the HRT that comes in there, and then maybe you work on thyroid optimization, and then maybe you work on a little bit of those adrenals, and then maybe now we have access to so many cool tests. Maybe they have a genetics test we can look at. Maybe there's a gut microbiome test. That's where you pull the whole foundation together.
Yeah.
And that's what we're looking at for that, you know, for living a really long life. So the hormones are awesome.
But oh, yeah.
They're like, you know, the frosting on the cake. You know, that's where, and honestly, they're probably a little bit more part of the cake too, because we've been doing hormones and I've seen such amazing results with it. But I do feel like we've got to pull in all the foundations when you're working on that, you know, that longevity.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the idea, you know, like you and I are in our 50s, which it's like, where does the time go? You know, it's like, oh my God. I don't feel like when we were younger, like I know you and I have talked about this a few different times. Like when you get to 50, you don't feel like you're 50. It's like, where did the time go? You know, I don't feel like I'm as old as I might be on paper. Right. I mean, do you feel like you're 52? No. when you're in your 20s or your teenager or your 20s, you think 50 is so old.
Well, it's just I had written in the newsletter, I was with my mom not that long ago, and she was she's so funny. She just points at people and talks. She's just this really kind of pushy Asian. And she pointed at this man trying to park his car, and he was parking so close to the car next to him. I'm like, nobody's going to get into that car to be able to back it out. And she's like, look at that old man trying to park. And this wasn't the nicest thing to say. I said, he's like your age. She goes, well, I don't feel like an old woman. He's an old man. Because I think it's a mindset.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. We used to go to A4M in Vegas all the time when we lived there. And, one of the doctors that was presenting, and he was talking about the centurions, blue zones, all that kind of stuff. You're from Okinawa, so you're part of, you know, your ancestry is from one of those blue zones. You got good genetics. And he was saying that one of the biggest predictors of, you know, people living to be 100 is how old do they perceive they actually are? You know, do you perceive where you are as old right now, or do you perceive yourself as young, wherever that is? That's one of the biggest predictors is, you know, so it comes down to lifestyle, maybe mindset, then lifestyle, and then all the hormones sort of help extend that a little bit longer. So I think the hormones themselves too actually create a little bit of that mindset. You know, they make you feel younger, you know, and maybe even on a mindset standpoint. I know rhythmic dosing for sure can do that for sure, just from a thought process and from a objective data standpoint, because you're raising those numbers.
Oh yeah. No, the rhythmic dosing, I think we talked about this on the other podcast. If you're really trying to, you know, achieve physiological levels of hormones to basically recreate that ovarian cycle of a woman that's, you know, 28 years old, it's the rhythmic dosing.
Sure.
But if you're doing static dosing of estradiol and progesterone, you should not try to recreate a physiological level of a 28-year-old woman.
They
you wouldn't feel good. That's just too much estrogen all the time.
Yeah. So, and it would eventually cause problems.
Yeah.
Eventually. I mean, maybe not guaranteed, but more than likely, you know, one of the rules, you have to keep people safe, and that's how you, that's why you just can't, you know, the last episode we did talking about dosing, how you dose it matters quite a bit.
That's why with all, whether you're perimenopausal, menopausal, postmenopausal, or you're in between menopause and perimenopause, you still need to have that interaction with your practitioner. And I still like to do labs. I know a lot of practitioners, like I said, everybody has their own way of doing their craft. And that's why it's an art and a science. So we don't bag on that. But for me, I do like to get that objective data. And the symptoms too. What are our symptoms? So I feel like that's just a really nice pairing. And then having a good, you know, patient practitioner relationship is also essential too.
Yeah, I mean, it's necessary for the communication. It's necessary for the adjustments. It's necessary to, you know, keep tweaking things until you finally get it right. And that's, you know, that's sort of what it's all about at the end of the day, you know, so that way, like you said, now you can get back to living on a daily basis. You're, you know, feeling good. If you're feeling good, your lifestyle is probably going to be conducive, or that's going to translate into activity and staying mobile and strong and, you know, all those things that you got to feel good in order to be able to do those things, right? So that's where the hormones can come in the short term, but now it keeps you doing those things, you know. Notice people, you know, moving around, and they, you know, there's this idea, at least people now, I think, are paying attention in their 50s to how they're going to live when they're in their 70s. Okay. I don't think the generation before yours and I's, like our parents' generation, and certainly before that, that was never really discussed or talked about. You just sort of lived, decline, and then now you can barely move and you can't, you know, do your activities of daily living anymore. Where I think now people are pushing that envelope very intentionally, okay, which is amazing to see. That's why right now you and I don't feel like we're, even though we're 50, I mean, we're like ready for a senior citizen discount when you and I were kids. I mean, I don't feel like a senior citizen.
I don't know if they do that anymore.
Yeah. Well, not at 50. They probably just keep raising the age, right? They're giving away too much free money that way because of too many discounts. But we talk to patients all the time, and they I say, do you feel like a senior citizen? They're like 61, 62. Do you feel like a senior citizen? I'm like, hell no, I don't. But again, when we were young, they would have 100% been a senior citizen. And back then, they probably would have looked like a senior citizen, you know, the proverbial blue hair and, you know, the glasses and, you know, maybe a walking device of some sort and a bunch of medications and, stiff, achy joints. That's not, you know, that's, I think there's still that population in the country and around the world. But I think it's, there's a whole other side of that that is, you know, really trying to push the envelope on a day-by-day basis. It's pretty incredible.
Well, I'd say the only walking device I have are the dogs.
Yeah.
We got to take those dogs for a walk.
Yeah. Well, they're high energy, so that's good for us because it gets us, you know, logging miles, and that keeps them tired and well behaved.
Maybe not that well behaved.
Yeah, Vivi's getting Vivian and Bob and Vivian. Vivi, we call her Vivi. She's getting a little reputation.
Yeah, but we put little bows in her hair, so then she could do no wrong.
Yeah, she's got a little mohawk and then little bows in her ears. She looks adorable. So she can get away with anything that way. No one really seems to mind too much because she looks so cute. All right, so in-betweeners, anything else to say? I know we kind of got off on a longevity tangent there, you know, how you transition, but... You know, at the end of the day, that's sort of what we're all trying to do. So
well, if you can, well, like you had said before, if you can keep somebody feeling good, so right when that, for us females, when we're having that hormonal decline and we're not feeling good, you know, brain fog, no libido, I'm gaining weight, I'm having hot flashes, I can't sleep, can't think, anxious, but then having periods and maybe a little anemic, PMS and all, you know, all that combined with the in-betweeners, if you can catch them, then help them feel better. That's where you set them up for success long term. Yeah. Like you were saying, you know, I'm going to, you know, go walking, you know, all the ladies we see with their weighted vests, you know, they got the weighted vests on. It's awesome. They want to build up that bone density.
They need to be heavier.
But if they don't feel good, you mean the weighted
vests? The weighted vests need to be heavier.
That's okay. But hey, they're doing it. So I'm just saying, but if you don't feel good, you're not going to do that. You're not going to do any of that. So yeah, that's where I feel like coming together with somebody and women and teaching them and also bringing us together so I can tell you, hey, this works for me. But someone says, you know what? Well, that works for me. And, oh, that's a really good point. So I do feel like, you know, the in-betweener time is like essential that you know, that we work on the health then. So that way we can get that longevity and that health span and live a long life and not, you know, feel like you're old and have that mindset.
Yeah, yeah. Who wants to be old? Or who wants to at least feel old?
I'd say it's for the birds.
Yeah. Certainly. So. all right. So any last final comments? Are we good?
No, I think we did good on this. Maybe later we'll swing back around and talk about lab work and what type of lab work you should have done. What are the actual numbers? Because I'm going to actually write a newsletter article for the next couple of weeks on that to have a little bit of.
Yeah. So how do you one of our next episodes is we sort of pinpoint how do you determine where you are now? Yeah. Granted, a lot of women probably know where they are, you know, just based on how they feel. But objectively, how do you determine that? What are you looking for on numbers? That'd be actually a pretty good one. I'm sure that people would find that interesting. So until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Valerie.
Take care.
Until next time.
Take care. Bye-bye.